This hour of the Jason Rand Show is brought to you by Northwest Safe. There is a lot of news happening all around the world and right here at home. So, let's find out what's trending.
What's trending? Media bias.
So, a Batman villain who moonlights as a congressman. His name is Steve Cohen. He's a Democrat from Tennessee. He was upset that CNN didn't carry yesterday's Corey Lewandowski hearing for its entirety. And we're talking about hours and hours and hours and hours of it. And there wasn't a lot going on. I mean, Democrats actually probably benefited that we didn't hear and see everything that happened yesterday because it was a huge bust for the Democrats. Democrats hoped that they would get Corey Lewandowski out there on the record, giving them sound bites to use in their quest to impeach President Trump. They got absolutely nothing because Corey Lewandowski was ready to, and I don't mean this in the legal terms, but to obstruct the Democrats in their attempt to impeach Donald Trump. Time after time after time, he was either trolling the Democrats, he was eating into the allotted time that they had to ask questions, he wasn't going by the scripted moments of the Democrats who put everything in writing and were literally reading from, including all of their outrage, all of their asides that they wanted to throw in there. They were actually reading from a script. And so when you've got a script of questions that you're going to ask and then the person who's answering doesn't follow that script, refuses to buy into it, things go a little bit crazy, as they did right off the bat with the committee chairman, Representative Jerry Nadler, the Democrat from New York.
My colleagues are going to get into the specific events in detail, but I'm especially troubled by the president's attempt to obstruct Congress's investigation and prevent the American people from learning the truth about what he's done, and I want to ask you questions relevant to that issue.
So just even there, because I think that's really funny, and I want to ask you questions that are relevant to that issue. Some staff member wrote that out for him. He couldn't even come up with that simple language to talk to Corey Lewandowski himself.
Mr. Lewandowski, is it correct that as reported in the Mueller report on June 19th, 2017, you met alone in the Oval Office with the president? I said,
Is there a book and page number you can reference me to, please? I don't have a copy of the report in front of me.
Volume. So this is, by the way, it's a smart-ass move. It's a smart strategy, because what he's trying to do here is eat into the 5 minutes. Now, you'll hear Jerry Nadler, he tries to get the time back, but it didn't work very well.
To page 90. But I simply ask you, is it correct that as reported in the Mueller report on June 19th, 2017, you met alone in the Oval Office with the president?
Could you read the exact language of the report, sir? I don't have it available to me.
I don't think I need to do that, and I have limited time. Did you meet alone with the president on that date?
Congressman, I'd like you to refresh my memory by providing a copy of the report so I can follow along.
Hey, you don't have a copy with you?
I don't have a copy of the report, Congressman.
This is so embarrassing for Jerry Nadler. This is so embarrassing because he can't think on his feet, because he's not as engaged in this issue as he wants you to believe once he does interviews. He prepares really, really well for all the interviews he does on CNN and MSNBC, but he's not prepared for Corey Lewandowski. And I'm not going to give Corey Lewandowski more credit than he's due. I don't think he's this incredible genius as it comes to strategy, but it shows you how bad Jerry Nadler is.
Clock will stop. Mr. Chairman, I request that the clock be stopped while this charade is sorted out.
This is Representative Cicilline.
I'm sorry, Congressman. What page was it?
The clock should have been stopped and should remain stopped. Page 90, volume 2.
Okay, and which paragraph, sir?
I don't have it in front of me.
You know, Corey Lewandowski is acting like the kid who's in class right before a three-day weekend and you're just about to get going, and then the kid raises his hand like, Mr. Smith? You said we were going to get homework before the long weekend just so we can totally maximize our Mondays. Like, he's that kind of annoying pain in the ass towards Nadler.
I hate those kids.
Those are the worst. And yet, in this case, again, it was very, very smart.
I'd like a reference, sir, so I can follow along on what you're asking.
Do you not have an independent recollection of whether you met with the president on that date?
Congressman, I'm just trying to find in the Mueller report where it states that.
Well, you have it in front of you. I gave you the
This is what happened yesterday for hours on end. And Steve Cohen, The Democrat from Tennessee is upset that we didn't really get to hear everything. Listen to him.
I do think the media should have covered it. And, of course, as it turned out, it showed the fact that he thought lying to the media was not consequential. And he did it all the time. Brianna, I'm not going to want to get into it because you're my friend and I like CNN. But the fact is, if that's the case, then Barry Burke doesn't have to be first. Being last and getting repeated on the news for the last 18 hours worked just as effectively.
Except it is so weird to me that Steve Cohen thinks that somehow the Democrats would have done better had there been more media coverage. If there was more media coverage on CNN, they would have seen how poorly the Democrats were prepared for this. They did not prepare for this kind of Lewandowski. Lewandowski came off very smart, alecky, and not necessarily likable, but they don't have a single clip, a snippet, a soundbite to use against the president. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending on Planet Sawant?
So Shama Sawant is using kids to promote a radical climate change agenda.
The Seattle Education Association, the union that represents public school teachers, has just voted on a resolution to support this strike action.
Oh, the climate strike action. This whole week marks a week of activism. There's going to be a rally on Friday morning, but we've got so many rallies, frankly, they don't really have any much impact anymore.
We need a major expansion of public transit, making it fully electric and free at the point of use. We need to retrofit buildings across the city, and all of this will create thousands of union jobs.
Oh, yeah, this is going to create thousands of union jobs, putting businesses out of business because they're not able to afford this kind of retrofit under the timeline that's being proposed. But okay, let's go ahead and move in that direction. This is not about the Green New Deal that was proposed by the Seattle City Council. This is actually about the kids who are there. You didn't hear them yet. We'll play a couple of them in a second. She rallied outside of Washington Middle School. It happened earlier this morning. Kids to her side, and she was demanding that the school district not mark kids as unexcused absences if they choose to skip school on Monday, or excuse me, on Friday, so they can attend these particular rallies.
Young people are correct to be outraged, and they have no choice but to take action.
They have to. Write that down. They have to take action. Just make sure you tell your kids that you have to take action. Now, she doesn't really mean action as you see fit. She means action as she sees fit. Right now, if any kid misses public school in Seattle on Friday to attend this or to do anything that they want, it will be listed as an unexcused absence. We know that you can't have too many unexcused absences. It is purposefully content neutral. Of course, kids like this idea of being able to skip school.
As adults who let the climate crisis get to a point of no return, don't force us to deal with the consequences of an unexcused absence.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Oh, man. Can we just say if the world is going to end in, let's say, 10 years or 12 years, whatever phony number that AOC is putting out there or Shama Sawant is putting out there, one unexcused absence is the least of your worry. One unexcused absence is fine. You're fine, kid. You will be fine. When they decide to fight for the rights of kids to rally for, I don't know, a pro-life cause, a pro-gun cause, something that's conservative, okay, at least they'll be consistent. They don't want kids to skip out on school unless it's to further their own propaganda. That's all that this is about. Have you ever heard Shama Sawant come out and say, you know what, kids should be able to go ahead and protest against that Planned Parenthood in Seattle? These kids should be able to get out of class, no unexcused absence, so they can show up and help defeat the head techs in the council. Of course not. They don't actually believe that. Now, the good news in all of this is Seattle Public Schools put out a statement just moments ago. They said, quote, Seattle Public Schools will not attempt to prevent students from participation in this event, but we cannot excuse the absence from school as it does not meet the criteria of an excused absence as defined by state law or board policy and procedure. That according to the district superintendent, Denise Juneau. Shama Sawant knows this. This is all about the theatrics. We've covered the types of theatrics she's done in the past where she sets up events that she already knows the end result of, but then she pretends that she's fighting for you. She knows kids will never get an excused absence for this, but she does it anyway because she thinks it looks good. And yeah, I suppose if you're a progressive parent and you're trying to raise your kids to believe the progressive ideology that you believe, this looks really good to you because this is Shama Sawant fighting on your behalf. but she's fighting a battle she knows she's not going to win, except when we're looking at public opinion. Then she does think we're going to actually win. That's what she thinks. And maybe she's right. But don't fall for this, because this is nothing but theatrics. And it's so transparent, like everything else that she does. Now, the sycophants, of course, love it. But normal human beings who can see right through this, I am kind of curious as to where they stand. 1-800-465-877 if you want to send me a text on the None Better Tax Resolution Hotline. 1-800-465-8770. You're listening to The Jason Rant Show. You can follow me on Facebook. In fact, if you text the keyword Facebook to 1-800-465-8770, I'll send you a link to the Facebook page and you can see the full video of me on Fox News. Earlier today, I was on with Harris Faulkner over at Outnumbered on Fox News. We were talking about Corey Lewandowski. We'll play a little bit of the audio later on in the show, but if you want to watch the whole video and comment about how amazing my hair is, text the keyword Facebook to 1-800-465-8770. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? Wait, what?
So Seattle has a new addition to our coffee culture, which, of course, I'm all about. I love coffee. I'm obsessed with coffee. I'm a coffee snob. I like to drink coffee as much as humanly possible, not because the caffeine gives me anything, although you can maybe tell I'm a little bit energetic. It has nothing to do with coffee, but because I actually like the taste. But in this case, we're now getting another bikini barista stand, although it's not really bikini. It's a dude. Lots of dudes serving coffee semi-nude.
Topless guy sitting in there with, you know, swollen pecs and whatnot.
Dream Boys is the name of this coffee shop. Dream Boys with a Z. And so, you know, part of me does have to give them props for ending it with a Z instead of an S. They just had a soft launch of their business yesterday, and obviously people are talking about it to Q or to Cairo 7 TV.
They're in these kind of like brief bikinis, and they're all very good looking young men.
So, good looking young dudes who are serving up coffee. Shirtless, wearing, you know, underwear. So for all the pervs now, whether you're a woman or a gay man, you now have a spot just like the perverted heterosexual men and bisexual women or lesbians who are going into the Everett coffee shop.
Like, why can women do it but male can't?
Okay, fair enough. Of course, now the question becomes whether or not this is appropriate. And of course, you've got people on both sides weighing in. Some people are like, this is not okay.
I thought the whole concept was very odd to me. It feels like something from a bygone era, honestly. I don't think it has any place in today's society.
A bygone era? I mean, I understand why you might not like this idea, the same way I'm presuming the guy doesn't like the idea of the bikini barista shop. Bygone era? When was this a bygone era? When were we doing this? In the 1950s? I don't quite. If anything, the era is right now-ish.
Yeah, if we were doing this already, then I'd be pretty impressed. if this already happened, like, you know, in the 50s.
Right? Ah, I mean, if a bygone, I honestly, I just don't know what that means. Others say things like this.
I just thought it was a lot of fun. I've never seen anything like it, and it's just like, yeah. Hell yeah, this is Capitol Hill.
Hell bring yeah. Okay, here's the thing. I don't particularly care. If the coffee's good, I will go for the coffee. I don't know if the coffee is good. My sense is when you do things like this, it's less about the actual coffee and more about the seeing the semi-naked men, the same way it is with bikini barista stands in Snohomish County. If you do not like this, as I have to assume some of you don't go. No one is forcing anyone to go to these particular shops. It's not demeaning if the person is choosing to do this, if they've got a good body and they want to show it off, and maybe if they don't have such a good body. If anything, there could be a controversy because it is Capitol Hill with all the hardcore progressives. Is this really all about body shaming? What about the fat men? Do you have any fat men who are shirtless serving up coffee?
Yeah, where's the husky barista?
Just saying. That's actually really good for the UW campus.
Nice.
Right?
That'd be cool.
You get a bunch of huskies there, but they also have to be husky, so it's like a play on words.
Nice.
And people are all going to be like, oh!
You're an entrepreneur.
I know what you're talking about. Write that down in the to-be trademarked book. No, the other one. No, the green. Put it in the green book. I'm going to go on Shark Tank.
Go digital, please. These books are annoying.
No, you know, digital, it might crash. I like the fact that we've got a nice little library going on there. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? in the media.
So the former White House press secretary Sarah Sanders was on with the Brian Kilmeade radio show earlier today, and they kind of got into a conversation about the media's attack on the administration that for a lot of people, whether or not you're a fan of this administration, a lot of folks are looking at what the media is doing, at least specific media outlets, and like, wow, it's kind of relentless. You're just going after Trump and this administration nonstop. And she says it all stems from how poorly the media in general mismanaged the narrative of the Russian collusion.
You couldn't talk about anything else. Everything always came back to Mueller. And I think that the media has a lot of egg on their face, and they're still looking to justify the 2.5 years that they've wasted pushing this false narrative against the president. And I think that's why they are constantly grasping at straws on some of these other ridiculous stories, because they need to justify all of the attacks that they've waged against the president.
And I think she's right. Again, this is not me taking a political position per se. I don't think it's inherently political to say that they clearly oversold the media in general. They oversold the Russian collusion. You had folks on MSNBC like Rachel Maddow specifically pushing these hardcore conspiracies, these Russian conspiracies. You had politicians who were happily going on television like Denny Heck, the congressman, Democrat from Tacoma, who was basically saying that the president is a Russian asset, that we have a literal Manchurian candidate. And there wasn't any pushback. You weren't hearing folks like Rachel Maddow or Chris Hayes or Wolf Blitzer or Don Lemon pushing back. They were encouraging it. They wanted to believe that story. And when the Mueller report came out and didn't back all the conspiracies that they had put out there, they decided to focus, hyper-focus, really, on very specific cherry-picked items in which they weren't giving you the full context. Now, the Mueller report was not all roses and sunshine and rainbows and unicorns for the Trump administration, but the way that they covered it made it seem way worse than it actually was. And rather than say, we went too far, we're going to hold back a little bit, we're going to start better vetting some of the comments that we're making in the stories that we do, what are we seeing? They're doing the exact same thing. That Jim Sciutto bombshell report on CNN about how the president was directly responsible for a Russian asset, American asset in Russia, having to be pulled from the field because his life was now on the line. Well, it turns out that was nonsense, that move to pull that asset from Russian government was made during the Obama administration, and it was made because of the media's specific spotlight on what that asset was actually finding out and bringing back here. But we were told by CNN that it was all Trump's fault. How many huge bombshell reports, either going after Trump or someone associated with Trump, how many of them had to be pulled back? How many of them had to be retracted? Quite a few, right? A lot of you at home right now probably listing some of them off in your head. Maybe you're talking to yourself in your car, which I assure you is actually the healthy thing to do when you're engaged in talk radio listening like this. But how many can you say happened under Obama? Now, I know that CNN and activists want to pretend that Obama was scandal-free. How many scandals can you name right now having to do with the Obama administration? Whether we're talking about the Fast and Furious scandal, whether we're talking about specifically targeting by the IRS conservative organizations, the death of an ambassador. How many of those scandals can you name off? And yet, did we get bombshell report after bombshell report against President Obama? No. They didn't want to do that. They liked him. They liked what he stood for. They liked that he was the constitutional law professor in chief. And so they had no motivation to go after him. They have motivation to go after Donald Trump because Donald Trump doesn't like the media. Although he secretly loves the media because he knows how to use the media, but he calls them out and that pisses them off. And yes, thank you. A text from the 860 with a bad word plus Benghazi. Yes, another scandal. Was it treated the same way that they're treating all of these phony scandals that turn out not to be scandals at all? Of course not. 1-800-465-877 if you want to send me a text. It's the Numb Better Tax Resolution Hotline. 1-800-465-877. Jason Rand Show on AM 770 KTTH and 94.5 FM on the Greater East Side. Yesterday, a business owner sent a very scathing letter to the Seattle City Council, calling them out for out-of-control taxes and really little to show for it. Panhandlers, mentally ill homeless people taking over city blocks, and traffic that's getting worse and worse and worse. It echoed the concerns that we've heard from a lot of business owners who own and operate in the Seattle area. Dan Austin is the owner of Peel and Press in Seattle. He's also behind Flight Path and Burien. He's not happy with the direction of the region, and he joins me now. Dan, thank you so much for coming on.
Thanks for having me on.
So why do you think this letter caught on so quickly?
You know, it's just been simmering, not even simmering anymore. It's been the feeling of business owners for, I would say, a solid 2 years, probably roiling before that, is that there's just a lack of understanding from the council of what it takes to operate, own and operate small businesses and what we bring to the community. And it seems like we just constantly have to fight for survival or fight for just some sanity to continue to try to live our dream and create small, fun, local neighborhood businesses. And it's getting to the point where people are just starting to break.
What does that fight look like to you? When you say, you know, we're fighting just to do what we're passionate about, trying to survive, take us through what that actually means.
You know, it's I've been down to testify multiple times on this latest legislation that came up that roped ancillary small businesses into this hotel workers bill. And it was about housekeeper safety was the main thing. And all of us are for panic buttons to keep, you know, sexual assaults down from happening at all. That's not part of the bill, but it wrapped in that small, you know, food and beverage establishments, coffee shops had this enormous healthcare requirement that if they were already 50 employee big, they were already required to have those expenditures in place. And now they've made it bigger. They've made it a cash payment that's larger. And it's there's no reason when you're talking about hotel housekeeper safety to wrap in servers, bartenders, coffee shop employees just because they're located in a hotel. You know, it's a small example of going down and testifying and explaining this and asking for why are you doing this and getting nothing back from the elected officials. It's really the fight is yelling at a brick wall.
Yeah.
And that's what's getting really frustrating.
Well, it just seems like they don't really have any clue what it's like running a business in Seattle. It doesn't even matter if there's nefarious intent behind some of these pieces of legislation. It's just they don't know. And just to briefly quote from this letter sent by the business owner behind Biscuit Bitch. And by the way, the letter and my commentary on this is available at ktth.com. The second sentence really speaks to all of this. She says, every time I turn around, I'm paying a new tax for a sign permit or an awning or a table outside, B&O tax, sugar tax, a myriad of licenses, elevator permits, health permits, higher property taxes that are passed on. And she says, what do I get in return from the city? And that's really what this is about, because you're getting nickel and dimed left and right, and maybe a one-time B&O tax that you pay once a year. You get that. But all of a sudden, all of these things start to add up.
It's death by a thousand paper cuts. And the thing that really frustrates us, you know, no one likes to hear that in 2017, the business license for myself personally was going from 110 up to 480. And just yesterday, I believe it was 511 is what the new one is for my yearly permit. And that was to pay for 200 police officers. And okay, I'll pitch in. That's great. I'm for public safety. I'm for making sure that the society in general is taken care of. But when we have less police officers than we had in 2017, where did that money go, and why am I paying it if we're not getting any increase in public safety, which was the way they pitched where that money was going? You know, just about a month and a half ago, I have a small deck on the back of my restaurant in West Seattle, and I'm not in an urban area, the Morgan Junction, and I had to pull a tent, sleeping bag, and some other stuff out from under the deck of my restaurant on a Saturday night because someone was trying to move in underneath my deck. Called the police because the person wasn't there. They wouldn't respond. So I had to get under a deck and pull stuff out and remove it from underneath my restaurant during a Saturday night dinner rush. These are the things where people are like, oh, why are you complaining? You know, you make X amount of money, which no one actually knows what a restaurant makes. It's not that much money.
You're not a millionaire? But, you know, what? I'm so confused by that.
I know, right? The revenue numbers sound great, but when you actually pay for everything, it's a very little amount left over. And when I'm not just, you know, teaching my staff how to pair wines with pastas, or, you know, what our special is tonight, but how to properly dispose of the trash in the garbage cans and don't push down because there might be a needle in it. And, you know, we're moving homeless encampments from under my deck. I get really upset that I'm paying an extra $400 a year for police that aren't there to help me and haven't been hired because the council doesn't support them. And it's just constantly new things that they keep coming up with to tax us. And they don't turn around and actually do anything to support us. And that's what's starting to get people to write letters like you saw yesterday.
Dan Austin is the owner of Peel and Press. It's in West Seattle and Flight Path in Burien. Obviously, having a business in West Seattle means you're dealing with Lisa Herbold, who's the incumbent Seattle City Councilwoman. She's hoping to get another term in office. From my perspective, at least someone not living in West Seattle, I look at her tenure so far, and it seems to be a total disaster as it relates not just to the police staffing issue that you mentioned, but homelessness. This was a council member who went out of her way to try to cut staff members from the navigation team, which is who would go out to your restaurant and deal with the people who are living underneath your deck. And then when she gets called out on it, she said, "Oh no, I never did that." Of course she did. We have facts showing she did.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, she railed against all of these negative flyers being sent against her by the downtown business interests or whatever. All of those are factual. I have the council votes. Happy to send them to you, but I'm sure you already have them. Every single vote on those that said when they, you know, what the vote was and how it was interpreted. And, you know, when we look at, if you walk up and down Main Street, West Seattle, so California Avenue, go look at the small businesses. Look at Husky Deli, Easy Street Records, Elliott Bay Brewing, West 5. You walk around the small local businesses that have been here for a long, long time and are trusted and great community leaders, all you're going to see is tablet signs. I have not seen a single small business with a Herbold sign in the window.
Phil Tavel is the one who's running up against Lisa. He was on the show about a month ago.
Yeah, great, great guy. Vice President, Mortgage Junction Community Association, Allied Arts, Green Spaces Coalition. The guy's just really community involved, but he's been for the last 4 years checking in on small businesses, asking how we're doing. He's a former small business owner. He is glad he doesn't operate nowadays in this environment as a small business owner, but he gets it and he listens. And that's the thing that we're excited about, where Lisa just doesn't listen or doesn't really seem to want to learn. And that's the thing that really bothers us. We have 9 council members who've never owned a business.
Yeah.
And that would be acceptable if they were willing to listen and learn from small business owners, but none of them really care to listen. They've got their ideas. They've got their agenda. They're right. We're wrong. We're rich, which is not true at all with any of us. But that's their narrative, and that's what they like to blast. And if businesses support a candidate, it's Amazon, but it's the small businesses. It's not Amazon supporting these. They're supporting some people in these campaigns, but they're trying to paint it as dirty business. And we're just small community local businesses, and we keep getting punched in the face with all these regulations and taxes that could have been a win-win with a couple different words in the legislation and everyone would be fine, but they're unwilling to listen and to compromise.
Well, and they treat you all exactly the same, and that's what kind of drives me nuts as someone who clearly knows the difference between a massive corporation, which, while I'm not going to call out as greedy and demonized, but it's much different how they operate versus how you operate at Peel and Press. And on top of that, anytime anyone talks out against any of these council members, all of a sudden, and Lisa Herbold, I believe, did this at the time of the Amazon head tax debacle, oh, it's the conservative outlets out there that are pushing this propaganda. It's like, as much as I would love to say I have that much power, I don't have that much power. I'm not able to completely switch over an entire progressive city of Seattle to go against them. And it just seems like they are purposefully either putting their head in the sand or they're just lying.
Yeah, it's I think it's probably closer to the latter that you just stated there, but it's an effective tactic to rile up their base. And the sad thing is it turns their base against local small businesses. I mean, I was called for a boycott during the head tax debacle because I had the petition available to sign for to put it on the ballot. And we had supporters of my council member and members of the SEIU call for a boycott against me and the restaurant, which was funny because my wife is an SEIU member as a nurse. So they called for it against their own union's household. But, you know, it gets vindictive, and it, you know, you tell a small business owner you got duped by Amazon, like, no, I'm pretty sure I know which of my vendors are going to jack my prices up because of these taxes and increases in regulations you're doing. I just know how to read a P&L and how one move affects seven other things, where the council just sees one move and it's the right move and we're going to do it, and they don't care about the blowback.
Yeah.
And that's the part that really upsets us. If I signed a 10-year lease in a hotel and I'm serving pizza and pasta down there, and somehow it's more harmful to serve it in a hotel space than it is my West Seattle space, so I have to come up with an extra $800 and whatever dollars per month per employee for health insurance on top of the regular, it makes no sense. It does nothing to protect the original intent of that bill that came out yesterday that really started that letter. It's just incredibly frustrating, and I feel like there's maybe more behind why they're doing it. There's a lot of opt-outs for if you have a collective bargaining agreement, these mm-hmm. things go away. So it does seem like maybe a push to force unionization, and I'm not anti-union, but it should be taken on by the workers themselves and not forced upon it by the city.
It should be voluntary.
Exactly, yeah.
Shocking that we would actually allow people to make the decision on their own rather than force it. I know that's crazy.
I know. I feel almost like they think that the workers aren't smart enough to realize that a union may or may not help, and so we're going to force you to do it because we're looking out for you more than you're looking out for yourself. And that takes away the choice. Like, what sort of society and democracy is that to force people into doing things they shouldn't or you shouldn't want to?
Yeah.
It's just mind-blowing to me, and it's frustrating. And, there's a group of West Seattle business owners getting together and formed a pact to support change on the city council. District 1 Neighbors for Small Business, and we're working hard to try to ensure that we get some change on the council and just a few people that can temper the nine people not having any idea what they're talking about when it comes to business, and get a few voices on there who can counter that and make people think, because right now no one's challenging anybody.
And that's why we're in the position that we're in. I wish you the absolute best of luck. You're supporting again Phil Tavel, who's running up against Lisa Herbold. We've asked Lisa Absolutely. Herbold to come on the show many times. She says no. Shocking. We might actually ask her some questions that she might not like. So I'm not going to hold my breath to expect that she'll ever come on the show. But the fact of the matter is, what she's doing to me, which is not responding, is what she's doing to folks like you who own businesses in West Seattle. So right now is a really good opportunity to remind people that Phil Tavel is running against Lisa Herbold. Even if you don't live in Seattle, understand bad policies tend to spread outside of Seattle. And so consider it a duty of yours to back someone like Phil to go up against Lisa Herbold, so that these horrible policies don't spread to your neck of the woods. We've been talking with Dan Austin, the owner of Peel and Press in Seattle, West Seattle, plus Flight Path in Burien. Dan, my friend, thank you so much for coming on. Really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
You're listening to The Jason Rand Show. Welcome back to The Jason Rand Show. Thank you so much for tuning in. Really do appreciate it. National polls are starting to tighten. In some ways, I suppose. Fox News just has a new poll out. NBC News has a new poll out. Joe Biden is still way ahead of everybody. Kamala Harris, it appears, has taken a pretty significant hit. Biden's up about 5 points since July. He's currently sitting at 31%. Elizabeth Warren is behind at 25. Bernie Sanders with 14. Pete Buttigieg at 7. Kamala Harris, who's not having a very good month, I think she decided to show up to that debate drunk. Because she sounded drunk, yeah. It's kind of embarrassing. Maybe you should say, yes, we can. She was a little tipsy. It sounded like she had a bit too much to drink beforehand. She's down 8 points since July. She's now currently at 13%. Now, this is still Joe Biden's to lose. Warren has still got a pretty good shot. It's between them right now. But every single time a Democrat goes after Joe Biden, as Julian Castro did and Cory Booker did at the last debate, I do think that Joe Biden picks up some points because he is likable, particularly amongst the establishment Democrats. But Harris is clearly in trouble. And she's not actually campaigning, not really, not that much. And it's actually kind of smart. Here's MSNBC.
Her drop in our new poll is the latest in what's been a downward trend. You can see it here. Her numbers spiked a little after that first debate back in June. But since then, this is what's been happening, right? After a fairly quiet summer campaign schedule. So what is the deal? Her advisors are telling our team she's putting cash over campaigning right now, concentrating on private fundraising ahead of this month's third quarter deadline. It's going to change tomorrow ahead of a pretty important steak fry in Iowa this weekend. Just about as important as steak fries get. But when the senator lands in the state tomorrow, it's going to be her first time there in more than a month.
So two things. Number one, go get me some steak because now I'm actually hungry.
Ooh.
I know I'm really hungry now.
Go with my
number
lunch
two,
well.
This is interesting. This is actually a smart strategy. Given where she is, she's clearly not getting the traction that she would hope for. This is really good strategy because the more money you have, the longer you can last. In a lot of ways, it's what Pete Buttigieg is doing, although Pete Buttigieg is doing a little bit more campaigning. So right now you've got 20 people running still or whatever the number actually is. You go into the first few primaries. If you've got a lot of money on hand, well, you can lose a few and then just carpet bomb with ads a state where you're polling a little bit better and you can try to win it that way. All you need is one primary result in your favor to extend the life of your campaign. The more money you have means the more money you can spend on ads, whether we're talking about TV or radio or newspapers, and that can gain you some traction. Now, Kamala Harris is not going to win in Iowa or New Hampshire. So then she looks at South Carolina, maybe. Or she's looking really far down the road at California, where clearly she has an advantage. If she can last that long because of the money, then she's doing the right thing, in my opinion. And of course, if someone makes a mistake, if Joe Biden or Elizabeth Warren pretends that she's still a Native American, or Bernie Sanders says something awful, like, she can take advantage of that because she's got so much money in the books for her. So that's what Pete Buttigieg is doing right now. He's kind of sitting back, raising a lot of money, and he's going to pounce at some point. So kudos to them for a strategy. They're bad candidates who are not going to be able to beat Donald Trump, but it is a strategy. 1-800-465-8770. Send me a text on the NumBetter Tax Resolution Hotline.